Brian, hello.
My son rang you last week sometime, Matthew Evans, and he said that he'd get me to ring you on the
Vietnam. Brian. Matthew called last week because I have discovered this wonderful organisation called Wounded Heroes. And Matthew rang and he mentioned you, that you served in Vietnam.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for calling back, Brian. You okay?
Yeah, mate. Yeah.
Okay, your phone's no good. Can you talk into it?
Yeah, mate. I'm just trying to be quiet because I don't want to wake the wife up.
No, fair enough.
But yeah. I'm all right now. I'm out in the back veranda.
You're out in the back veranda. Well, you just relax.
Yeah.
Listen, we've got Anzac Day coming up on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Wounded Heroes helps people who, and their families who have served and need some help. And I understand you know about Wounded Heroes.
Yes, mate. Yeah, I do.
Tell me about your involvement with Wounded Heroes.
I don't have an involvement with them, although I'm thinking about getting in touch with them. I made them myself, started VASA, Veteran Support and Advocacy Service Australia, and they're at Toowong. We started that in 1991, 1992. We've helped a lot of veterans there get pensions and welfare, things like that. So it's about to close because there's just nobody coming through to them anymore.
Yeah, and Wounded Heroes survives off donations. And, you know, I'm actually going to talk to Anthony Albanese, the leader of the opposition, tomorrow. And I'm going to put it to him that he could pledge, if he wins government, to help Wounded Heroes out because they genuinely save lives.
Mate, it'd be good if the government did get behind something. What's happening? But there's all these ESOs around,
yeah,
and the government loves it because there's too many of them.
ESOs?
Yes. There's too many of
them. What's an ESO?
And ex-service organisation.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And the government loves it because what's happening is each one is better than the other due to egos.
Well, you're probably right. But anyway, I've got Albo on the program tomorrow, and I'm going to put it to him. But I want to talk about you, Brian, if I can. How old were you when you went to Vietnam?
20.
And were you in the army?
Oh, yes.
Right, so you weren't a conscript, you were general infantry.
No. Well, I was a conscript.
Oh, okay. So you were conscripted?
Yes.
Your number came up?
Yes.
How did you find out?
That my number come up?
Yeah.
I got a letter telling me that I had to report to Marrickville in Sydney.
And they gave you a date?
Yeah, a date and a time that I had to be there, and I got there.
How much warning did they give you?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was a week, maybe 2 weeks, I think.
And they gave you... So, did you have any idea... How old were you, 20?
Yeah.
Because conscription started at 18, so you got through 2 years.
No. Conscription started at 20.
I thought it was 18.
No, 20. You got your call-up papers at 20.
Okay, I thought it was 18. Anyway, so you got called up at 20. Did you have any idea what you were in for?
Oh, no. No.
Take me through it. So you went to training...
Yeah, I went to Marrickville, and I don't know how many blokes were there now, but there was quite a few. And then we jumped on buses and went to Singleton, and I did 6 months training at Singleton.
Yeah,
that's rookies, which is just recruit, and then did the corps training, private, infantry, and from there went to Vietnam.
Wow. When you went to Vietnam, where did you land?
Well, we took off here with Mascot at about 11 o'clock at night. We dropped off at Darwin, about, I think it was about 3 hours later, then Singapore for breakfast. From Singapore, we went to Tonsonut, which is the main airport in Saigon. And then we were picked up by Caribou and went from there straight into Nuwadat.
Straight into Nuwadat?
Yeah, Nuwadat was where the task force was.
Yeah. When you're 20 years of age, you've just arrived in Nuwadat, Vietnam. What happened then?
I remember getting off the plane and looking around and sort of not knowing what's... You're still green, you don't know what to expect. But just looking around, we got a drink and a sandwich and I think an apple. And I remember eating the sandwich and some of the blokes threw the crust and the sandwich in the bin, in the rubbish bin. And Vietnamese women just jumped on them, picked them out of the bin, and I'm going, what? It turned my stomach, but then I got used to it. It took a while, but I got used to their ways, being a poor country and a country in a war. They didn't sort of have much, and a lot of people, I suppose, were beggars. And they just got what they could when they could, and that's what these women did. They knew that we turned up and there was food, so they were just hanging around. So,
when did you see the first combat?
Oh, yeah, I'd been there. I went to ARU, which is Australian Reinforcement Unit, and I was there for about a week or something, I think. And then I went to 4R, 4th Battalion, and we had a big contact in the Courtney Rubber. We flew out, I think I'd been there about 3 weeks, and I was B Company 4, and we were ready reaction company. So if something happened, all our gear was already packed. We just picked it up, jumped in choppers, and took off to where the action was. And that's what we did. And we went up to the Courtney Rubber. We landed. There was, I remember, an open field, and there was APCs, armoured personnel carriers, in it. And then we landed. Got together, the officer commanding told us what was happening and why we were there. Then we moved into the rubber, just inside the rubber, and we lay down watching the APC. So we had our backs to the rubber looking out into the open field. And we're sitting there and we're laying there and nothing happened. And I remember looking around thinking, what are we here for?
Yeah.
Then we got up and we moved into the rubber. And going into the rubber, that was an experience because the rubber had a very, very thick canopy.
Yeah.
And the further you went in, the darker it got. So we walked in about... say about half a K, three quarters of a K, and it was dark. You could see, you could see, but it was dark. And we stopped and we turned and we started heading back out again. And the Yanks were leading us. And we walked for, 10, 15 minutes. We walked, patrolled, we were looking. Everybody just stopped and we're sort of waiting for something to happen. And a shot rang out, a couple of shots rang out. And I remember to this day, still remember, and this was 50 years ago, hitting the deck. There was a small mound of about maybe a foot. The mates were one side and I was the other side. I was pointing in towards them. And I remember a mate saying, if they come from anywhere, they come from behind you. Now, I don't remember getting up and getting on the other side of this mound. Then the shit fight started further up about 30 yards to my left. So we're looking for movement. We thought we saw movement, so we opened up. And I can remember over the sounds of the 50 caliber, 30 caliber, SLRs and light machine guns, M60s. With all that going off, I could hear pop, 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 pop. And that was the AK-47s shooting back. And there was quite a few of them shooting back at us. Then it slowed down and the firing stopped. So we moved up the 20 yards and we were actually in their camp. But they moved out of their camp and there was a small ravine, went down up the other side and the Nogs were sitting up there, the Vietnamese, North Vietnamese, we call them Nogs. They were sitting on the other side of the hill shooting back into us. We were in their camp.
Did you ever come face to face with the enemy?
Yeah. By face to face. What do you mean face to face?
Well, were you always shooting each other from a distance or was it up close?
Oh, no. It was up close. Sometimes it was at a distance, but most of the contacts were up close.
Did you take many prisoners?
No. Because if you were a patrol, and you were a patrol of a section of men, 8 to 10 men, how are you going to take a prisoner? How are you going to hold him?
Yeah.
What are you going to do with him?
So you took no prisoners?
Well, no.
No. How long were you in Vietnam for?
12 months.
It's a long time. You must have been relieved to come back to Australia, but I want to ask, how were you treated by the Australian public when you finally came home?
Like a criminal? You know, I thought I was over there, and along with everybody else, I thought we were over there protecting Australia, stopping the yellow peril coming into Australia. And I had dreams of, I'm an Anzac, because I was with 4 and 6. And 2, 4 and 6 are Anzac battalions, because they had Whiskey and Victor Company with them. Now, I'm an Anzac, but I don't call myself an Anzac in respect to the Anzacs.
What do you mean you were made to feel like a criminal? Can you try and explain to us what you mean? I know what you mean, but I just, for those who don't remember.
Yeah. I can remember going to the pub in the valley. I think it was the Brunswick. I went in with a mate.
You were in uniform?
No. This was an Anzac Day.
Right.
And this would have been maybe 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I was in there having a drink and I had my medals on because I was, I'd marched in Brisbane.
Yeah, so you had your medals on,
yeah. Yeah. So I went into the pub, ordered a beer, and this chap at the end of the bar, he was off his face. And he said, oh, you went to war? And I said, yeah, I went to Vietnam. And he said, baby killers. Oh. And I thought, hell. Oh. And I wanted to grab him. I really did. But I stopped myself. And now I think I should have grabbed him and knocked the shit out of him. But, yeah, that was 20 years after we'd come back. When we came back, we, 6 RA and 4 RA, we marched through Brisbane And there was a lot of welcoming, but there was a lot of bad shit going on too. Paint and pig's blood thrown over us. And
you had pig's blood thrown over you when?
When we come back.
Jesus.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things.
Have you been back to Vietnam, Brian?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I went back about 12 years ago, and I went back for the anniversary of the Battle of Long Tan in 16.
And how did you find it going back? Was it triggering for you, or did you get some closure? How did you feel about going back, and how did you feel about the people? Because I went to Vietnam not so long ago, and I found the people wonderful, and they weren't resentful about the Australians at all. They referred to it as the American War, and we were welcomed with open arms. How were you welcomed?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, we were. I was, and everybody else was. I found the Vietnamese people lovely people. They go out of their way to help you, more so than I felt more welcome there than I did back in Australia when I come back.
Say that again.
I said I felt more welcome in Vietnam when I went there than I did when I come back from Vietnam to Australia. Isn't that terrible?
It's worse than terrible. Brian, thank you so much for calling up. I've so enjoyed talking to you. How are you today? Are you being looked after?
By my wife, yes. The government, not so much.
What more do you think the government should be doing for veterans like yourself?
They should be doing a lot more. I think myself, my life's over. I mean, I'm 74 next month, so my life's over. But we should have been looked after when we first came back. The young guys now should be looked after. The government is giving the veterans today, the young ones coming back, and everybody else, myself included, lip service. They're talking about us. They're saying, well, they come back, they've been to war, and we're going to look after them, and, you know, all gung-ho, and we're going to do this. And I've had so many pieces of paper from the government for new ideas that they're going to do, and nothing comes of it. What the government does is they send out a piece of paper and they say, okay, what affects you the most? How are you affected? And you've got to tick all these things. And it goes back into the government. Then they sit there and they might go through a million pieces of, well, maybe not that many, but at least, say, 10,000 pieces of paper. And they'll find out what is prevalent, what you're suffering from, what everybody's suffering from. That's what they did with us. And then they said, like, they asked questions about PTSD, about cancer, skin cancer, not so much about Agent Orange. They left that alone. But then when we sent that back in and we said, yes, we got cancer, we got skin cancer, or we got lesions or whatever, they picked the most prevalent ones and they said, okay, this is what we're going to do, amongst themselves, not to us. They said, this is what we're going to do. We will say to them, okay, you go to your doctor. If he says you've got cancer or lesions or whatever, we'll cover it. But it doesn't mean you're going to get a pension. You still have to fight for your pension. So they're giving you lip service. They're going to fix what's wrong with you, but they're not going to give you something to live by or something to some kind of sustenance that can keep you alive. You understand what I mean?
I totally understand what you mean. Folks, Wounded Heroes helps people like Brian, and they need your help. 1-300-853080 or 853080 or woundedheroes.org.au, or just go into Google, and type Wounded Heroes. It'll take you straight there. Any help you can give would be greatly appreciated, so people like Brian don't have to go, yeah, cup in hand, begging for the help that they so deserve. Fancy being sent there by your government. You come back and you're called a baby killer, and you have pig's blood thrown on you. It's just disgraceful, isn't it? Brian, I'm going to put you back to Jess. And if it's okay with you, Brian, I want to stay in touch. Is that okay?
Oh, mate, of course, because I've got so much to tell you, so much that would help. I'd like to say something now, if I can,
yep,
because it's going to help veterans that are listening. When we come back, because you're with your mates and you live with them, you die with them, you eat with them, you play with them, you sleep with them, but you're with them 24/7. You're with them patrolling and they're there giving you support and you're giving them support. That's for 12 months. You come back with your wife and it takes you so long to be intimate with your wife because you're used to walking around with your mates, with the men, and you actually love one another. You really do, and you respect one another. And it takes so long to be intimate with your wife because it's like being intimate with your mates. And it takes a long time to go from your mates to the female.
Yeah.
And of a night time, what you do is you're laying in bed with your wife and you're thinking, oh, I'll go to her. Oh, no, I can't. She doesn't want me. This is going through your head. And your wife is laying there thinking, he never comes to me. Why doesn't he come to me? That's the start of the breakdown of the marriage. And I did a lot of counselling with veterans in their families. And I hated to see a veteran split from his wife and kids through no fault of their own, simply because they didn't understand one another or what was happening.
Very well put. Very well put. 75 next month, are you?
No, 74, mate.
74 in May?
Yes, mate. Yes.
What date in May?
20th of May.
I'm the 10th.
Oh, wow, you really?
And my dad, who served in 1945, he was the 1st of May.
Oh, really?
So we're all bulls.
Ah, yes, mate, yes. We're all bulls or we are bulls?
We are bulls. Stay there, Brian. Jess is going to get your details because I want to stay in touch with you, okay?
Okay, thank you.
And maybe we can talk again later this week as we approach Anzac Day.
Oh, for sure, mate. For sure. Listen, both my boys are listening too, Matthew and Paul. I love both of you.
Lovely. And thank Matthew for getting you to call me.
I certainly will.
I hope I haven't been intrusive.
No, mate, no. I said to Matthew, he said the same thing to me. He said, I know it's going to be hard. He said, but I'd like you to do it. And I said, yes, I will. Because I was very hard on my boys when I come home. They say no, but I feel as if I was. And now I'll do anything for my boys because they're so loyal to me. They love me and I love them.
They know
yeah.
it. They know it.
Yeah, I think they do. I think they do, yes. But yes, mate, I'd
Brian,
like...
Brian, what are you going to do on Anzac Day?
Well, I do the dawn service here at Bundamba, and both my boys are going to be with me, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm wearing my greens, my slouch hat, my GP boots, and my medals.
Good on you.
Yeah.
I'm close to tears here. How about you, folks?
Worn the greens and that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, especially marching with Paul and Matthew.
Brian, stay right there. We'll talk again this week, but I want to stay in touch, all right?
Okay, then. Thank you very much, Luke.
Mate, can I say one more thing?
Yes, mate, go for it.
Thank you for your service.
Mate, thank you for listening.
Mum and Dad and Denny saw the passing out parade at Puckapunyal. It was a long march from cadets. The 6th Battalion was the next to tour, and it was me who drew the card. We did Canungra and Shoalwater before we left. Townsville lined the footpaths as we marched down to the quay. This clipping from the paper shows us a young and strong and clean. And there's me in me slouch hat with me SLR and greens. God help me. I was only 19. From Buntow riding Chinooks to the dust at Newey Dat, I'd been in and out of choppers now for months. We made our tents a home, VB and pin-ups on the lockers, and an Asian orange sunset through the scrub. And can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? And night time's just a jungle dark and a barking M16. And what's this rash that comes and goes? Can you tell me what it means? God help me. I was only 19. A 4-week operation when each step could mean your last one on two legs. It was a war within yourself, but you wouldn't let your mates down till they had you dusted off. So you closed your eyes and thought about something else. And then someone yelled out, contact! And the bloke behind me swore. We hooked in there for hours, then it got almighty raw. And Frankie kicked a mine the day that mankind kicked the moon. God help me. He was going home in June. And I can still see Frankie drinking tinnies in the Grand Hotel on a 36-hour rec leave in Buntow. And I can still hear Frankie lying screaming in the jungle till the morphine came and killed the bloody row. And the Anzac legends didn't mention mud and blood and tears. And the stories that my father told me never seemed quite real. I caught some pieces in my back that I didn't even feel. God help me. I was only 19. And can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? And why the Channel 7 chopper chills me to my feet? And what's this rash that comes and goes? Can you tell me what it means? God help me. I was only 19.
Wounded Heroes, 1-300-85-3080, 1-300-85-3080, or woundedheroes.org.au, or just Google in Wounded Heroes. It's such a worthwhile charity, helping people like Brian and the other people that you've met on this program. And in the lead up to Anzac Day, we'll feature more, but what about Brian, eh? Fancy going through that. And you come back and on Anzac Day, you're having a beer and someone from the end of the bar calls you a baby killer. You know, and we're told by the government to go there. If you've never been to Vietnam, can I recommend it? If you've got a strong tummy, go to the War Memorial in Saigon. They still call it Saigon, by the way. I know it's supposed to be called Ho Chi Minh City, but the locals still call it Saigon. And it's three stories and it's a circular building and you start at the top and you come down. It's very confronting. But when you look at how capitalist Vietnam is now, with Coke signs and McDonald's everywhere. And it's probably the most capitalist communist country you're ever likely to go to. But you think to yourself, why were we here? Why were we here? Should never have been there. 133353 is the telephone number. Wounded Heroes, 1300 85 30 80. Quick break, be back.